This is Paul Sandel. It is March 14th, 2012. We are in the Russell Senate building in Senator Hutchinson's conference room. And with me is Scott Sosby and Laura Blackburn. And we are here with the Charlie Wilson Oral History Project to interview with Peggy Love. Now, Peggy, I had the fortune of rereading your last interview just recently. And so based on some of the great information there, I wanted to follow up. There was a question that was burning in my mind that I wanted to have answered that first time. Do you have a favorite memory of Charlie that you're willing to share?
Yes, I do. Charlie was known for helping the underdog. Mm-hmm. And before I went to work for Charlie, I worked for Congressman Wayne Hayes, who was from Ohio. Mm-hmm. And Congressman Hayes was involved with this woman, Elizabeth Ray, that worked on his staff. And there was allegations that he had hired her to be his mistress. And that was not true. I mean, I knew Liz, and she did type, and she did, answer the phone and stuff. But Congressman Hayes was very powerful, and, you know, a lot of people didn't like him, so they seized upon this opportunity, and he ended up retiring from Congress. And because people didn't like him, they wouldn't hire me, even though I wasn't from the district. You know, and that's, you know, how things work on the Hill. And Charlie was the only one that would offer me a decent job. And I'll never forget, Charlie offered me the job on December 16th and December 31st. I was being taken off the payroll from Congressman Hayes. So I will always be indebted to him for giving me this job, because I was looking for months and months. And after Congressman Hayes announced his, you know, retirement, the main thing we did was look for a job. And Charlie took me on. So.
Now, what was that? What was that like? I mean, obviously, you're applying to jobs. Did you meet with Charlie, or are you meeting at that point with Schnabel or some of the others in the office?
Charles Simpson. Was Congressman Wilson's administrative assistant at the time, and one of the interviews I had, I don't remember if it was the first interview or not, but Charles wanted to take me upstairs, you know, for the interview, and we go into the storeroom, and of course I'm thinking, you know, having worked for Hayes, and it just, you hear all these stories about them, like, oh my God, what have I got myself into, you know, and I didn't know who Charlie was or his reputation. I mean, I was just, you know, pounding the pavement looking for a job, it all turned out okay, you know, just because he had his storeroom set up like another office.
Okay. Now, when you're here in the office, who are you working with most often? Were you working directly with, say, Simpson or some of the other angels most often?
No, I was kind of independent. I did casework and health legislation for him. And having worked for Congressman Hayes, you know, because he was so powerful in Congress, mm-hmm. I did casework for Congressman Hayes as well. And so I had direct access to the director's office of all the federal agencies. I mean, I had private numbers of, like, the director's key people. So I dealt with them in doing casework. And I did casework in the Washington office. And Charlie also had folks doing casework in the district office.
Yeah.
And then with the health legislation, you know, again, Charlie was more into defense and foreign ops stuff. And there were things like when they were going to, there was a bill coming up to create the new Department of Education. Mm. And based on the letters coming in from the constituents, I would do like a one-pager for Charlie. And, you know, when the bill was coming up for a vote, and just tell him I think he should vote for the bill or against the bill, you know, based on the feedback from the constituents. And just give him a little summary of it. And Charlie and I thought, you know, a lot, we thought a lot alike. So sometimes he would question me as to why. And sometimes I think he was doing that just to see if I really knew what the bill was all about, and I just wasn't, you know, being lazy and saying, Charlie, you need to vote for this, or, you know, don't vote for that. But it was good. It was good for me.
You bring up an interesting aspect, saying that you thought a lot alike. I know our graduate student here, Laura Blackburn, is working on a thesis on Charlie, really trying to nail down Charlie's political philosophy, and I know she had some questions.
Right, we've had conflicting, you know, from different interviewees, it's whether he was conservative or liberal. Do you have any, I guess, opinion about that? What, if there were certain aspects that he was more liberal or...
I think it depended on the issue. I know one thing I admired about Charlie is he would vote on different pieces of legislation based on the views from his constituents, but also on what he felt was right for the country in his gut. And I know one of the issues I handled was abortion. And, of course, his constituents were against abortion and the right to choose. And Charlie was more in favor of the right to choose, especially in cases of rape or incest. And remember, every January when the Right to Life first came to D.C., you know, I would get a dozen dead roses. And the first time they came to the office, I'm like, wow, somebody sent me a box of roses. Because they come in a long box, but, you know, they're dead roses.
So at first you're all, yay, I'm getting some roses.
Yeah, I'm excited. And I'm like, you know, who, what sick person sent these? And then, I was young, and you learn. There were times when the folks would come up from the district, you know, I would always meet with them, and, you know, they knew Charlie's position, but they would come in and they would try to convince me to convince him to go otherwise. And, but he didn't, I mean, because he just felt in his heart that it was right to have a woman choose, mm-hmm. especially in cases of rape or incest, whether she wanted to carry the baby to term or not. Mm-hmm. So in that respect, I mean, I admired him, and, you know, I think his constituents did too in the long run, because they always kept voting him back in. Mm-hmm,
mm-hmm. Well, how would you describe his political philosophy? You're put in a corner and someone says, what is Charlie Wilson? Would you stick to, well, it's the situation, or if I were to generalize, I would try to categorize him this way or that way?
You mean overall?
Overall.
Like who is Charlie? Charlie was a very unique member of Congress and a very unique individual. When he walked into a room, the room just lit up. I think mainly because of his height and because of his voice. But he was very charming. I think he charmed the skin off a snake. But he was very honest. When Charlie told you something, whether it's what you wanted to hear or whether it was something you didn't want to hear, you know, you could count on his word. Mm-hmm. And unlike, you know, a lot of politicians, you know, they kind of go with the flow, but not Charlie. And, you know, there were times where... I know, like, when I was meeting with the Right to Lifers one time, mm-hmm. they were in his office, and he came in, and I had been meeting with them for about 45 minutes, and, you know, there was about 30 of them and just one of me, and we were kind of cramped into his office. And, you know, I listened to them, and they knew that, you know, what Charlie's position was, mm-hmm. and they were just going over and over and over, and I kept telling them, you know, I'll pass your concerns on to him, mm-hmm. But they just kept going on and on and on, and he needed his office, so he comes in, and, you know, he essentially repeated what I had been telling them, and he told them that, you know, he would sit down and talk to me and listen to what they had to say, but this was his position on this, and he needed his office, and thanked them for coming. Mm-hmm. So, you know, again, he was a very honest person, and he didn't tell his constituents what they wanted to hear. He told them what he believed was right for them and what's right for the country.
Well, is there other examples, then, where was he, in your opinion, at odds with what his constituency wanted, say, abortion? Are there any other issues that he firmly believed one way and his constituents did not?
Not that I can think of off the top of my head. But another example of him doing what he felt was right for the country, mm-hmm. was his involvement in Afghanistan. because, you know, there was no defense contractors in his country, I mean, in his district, military bases down there. I mean, defense was not something that his constituents were really interested in as far as benefiting them, you know, getting more jobs for the district, you know, things of that nature. But it was something that Charlie felt in his gut was right for the country. And on the other hand, I also, you know that he took a great interest in the veterans, and there were a lot of veterans in his district. And you know, he would do a lot for them, and you know, I did the veterans casework, and you know, there were veterans that were trying to get disability benefits, whatever, and you know, we would push to the hilt to try to make that happen, if in fact we felt that it was a legitimate case.
Okay. Well, with that said, then, how much of the Afghanistan time, that situation, did you or any of the other Angels really know what he was up to or what was happening? Was any of that made known to any of you? Or were there whispers?
Since I did the casework of the health legislation, it wasn't really anything that, you know, I worked on. The folks that did his defense work, appropriations work, foreign ops work, they could probably answer that better than I. But I do know that he did a lot of it on his own. And again, I think because of the sensitivity of it and the fact that he didn't want to... if anything went wrong, went south, he didn't want to have any of his staff involved. And I don't mean that, you know, he was doing anything illegal, but there, you know, and he certainly did have his key staff involved in the war and the appropriations and what was going on there. But there were some things he did that the staff didn't know about.
Okay, so there was just things, okay, we don't know exactly what's going on. Okay. Well, speaking of the staff then, tell me a little bit about Charlie's Angels. Obviously, the moniker comes from the famous TV show, so I instantly picture Kate Jackson and Farrah Fawcett running around. Where did that name come from?
I'm Kate Jackson,
from?
By the way.
On the record. Where did the usage of that name pop up? Do you know? Was it already in place when you joined?
When I started working for Charlie, the TV show was popular, and I don't remember exactly how it got brought up, but I do remember going to a Rotary meeting in the district with Charlie, and there were a couple other, you know, staff with me, and he was giving a speech at their morning breakfast club, and speaker, you know, introduced Charlie, and then he said Charlie's Angels are here with him. And, you know, at first we, you know, thought it was kind of demeaning to be called Charlie's Angels.
Okay, yeah, so what was that? Was there a talk? Because you've obviously transitioned into a very affectionate, I self-identify, we are Charlie's Angels.
Yeah.
So, yeah, take us through that process of it being, is this demeaning to, this is who we are?
Well, it was kind of demeaning, but yet, on the other hand, it was kind of flattering. You know, because you're being associated with this, you know, hit TV show. But yet, on the other hand, you know, we thought, well, you know, I've got a name, and it's not, you know, Charlie's Angels. But as it kind of, you know, progressed, it's great now. In fact, I've got some friends who are Charlie's Angels wannabe. I was in Arkansas this past week, and I've got some property down there, and we had it was referred to as a Girls Gone Wild weekend, and we stayed at one of the ladies' cabins, and there were like five of us, and we all have nicknames: Angel One, Angel Two, Angel Three, and of course I'm Angel One.
I was going to ask. Okay, we need to know on the record. Baby Love is Angel One.
There was one lady whose cabin we stayed at, and she, you know, was a wannabe, and so we made her go through this, you know, test of sorts, and over the weekend, and when we were leaving, you know, Sunday evening, we voted her in as, you know, Angel Six.
Thanks.
And so these are ladies, and, you know, just ladies I've become acquainted with in this past year, but who are just kind of intrigued by this whole Charlie's Angels. And in fact, we watched the movie, Charlie Wilson's War, and I brought a picture of Charlie that I had, so you know, those a couple ladies didn't know what he looked like, and so I had his picture, and one of the ladies would actually speak to him every morning when we got up. When she got up. Yeah, she was proud of the fact. She said, I don't know if any of you talked to Charlie today, but I said hello to him this morning. And so, and as far as the angels themselves go, it's been fascinating to me how the ladies have stuck together.
Have they?
Yes.
Okay.
Through, you know, some of us have been through divorces, some of us have been through, you know, just bad marriages or sicknesses or, you know, you have family problems or whatever, but everybody just sticks together and just tries to help each other out. It's like a group of sorority sisters. It's amazing.
I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
Is that unusual among staffers that work for congressmen, is that they do stick together afterwards?
The only other member I worked for was Congressman Hayes, and I stayed in touch with his administrative assistant until, you know, she passed away several years ago. I don't know, but I would think that because of the transition, you know, on the Hill, that I just think Charlie's staff was a special group. I mean, I could be wrong, but...
Do you think he had a role in that?
Yes. Excuse me. Yes, I do. I think Charlie had some sort of innate ability to hire staff that he knew would get along. I mean, because, you know, when you get a group of women together, you're always going to have somebody that's, you know, meh, 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 you know. And it's, but it was, if anybody did, they were just kind of shunned, you know. It's, like I say, it's just amazing to me how everybody has stuck together.
Now, is the Angels a particular cohort in time, or do you find yourself having angels that were with Charlie prior to you arriving and then after you arrived and you're all members of a larger club, or is there sub-cliques of angels?
Depends on who you talk to.
Okay.
The angels are, to me, ladies that work for Charlie when he was a member of Congress. And there are some ladies that may have worked, you know, just for a couple months, and, you know, the jury's out on whether or not they're considered an authentic angel. Yeah,
oh.
If they were just like filling in for somebody.
So are there rules and regulations that angels have?
No. Not anything official. There is a group that has just stuck together more than the others. Some we've just kind of lost touch with.
Well, what is that core group, if you don't mind sharing, of who the core angels are?
Oh, gosh, I hope I don't leave anybody out. there's around, I want to say around 20 to 25. I know I'm not going to get everybody's name.
Okay.
But Candy Hooper, yeah. Agnes Bundy, Janet Ginsburg, Carol, Simons Huddleston. Molly, a lot of the folks you have the list.
Yeah.
Molly Hamilton.
Yeah.
Elaine, of course. And Elaine has been key in kind of keeping everybody's emails and phone numbers updated.
Is she that's her role as the...
And I don't know how she finds the time, because she has two children, and, you know, it just... but she's... Dolores Haynes... Cynthia Steele Vance.
Okay, yeah.
I know I'm leaving people out.
Oh, that's fine.
Maria Zanes.
And so when's the last time you all got together?
Well, a couple of them got together, I think it was last week. I was in Arkansas, and Agnes was in town.
Okay.
And when Agnes comes to town, she'll shoot out an email, you know, I'll be in town these dates, you know, if anybody can get together. Or Amy was in town a couple weeks ago, and same thing, they shoot out an email, you know, can we get together for lunch or dinner? Mm-hmm. And whoever's around and available, you know, we'll...
Did you go to work for another congressman after Charlie retired?
No. I left Charlie in 1984, and I went to work for the Air Force Surgeon General. Okay.
What about others? Were there some that were on his staff when he retired or left him that went to work for other congressmen?
I know Dolores did. I don't know about the others.
So I just wondered if they ever talked about the different experience of working in a different office for a different congressman that they had. Did you ever have any of the staffers who didn't like the moniker and chafed against the moniker Charlie's Angels when they went to work there?
Not to my knowledge.
So they almost everybody embraced it.
Yes. To my knowledge. It got to be kind of flattering after a while. Again, because the TV show was so popular.
Sure.
And because the ladies on the TV show were, attractive.
Yeah,
and,
as you said, I'm Kate Jackson.
Yeah. And, of course, tied in with that was the fact that Charlie was known for hiring intelligent, good-looking women. So, when you tie it all together, it wasn't too bad to be called the Charlie's Angel.
Did you ever find it a hindrance, though, in working with other people on the hill where they thought, I'm not going to take them seriously? You never did see that?
No, again, because Charlie's staff was known to be intelligent and hardworking, and, they all bonded. And did our best to, take care of him and, do our best for him and his constituents.
What was he like to work for?
Fabulous. What I liked about Charlie is I like to work independently. You tell me, you need this done, you need that done, you need this bill passed, you need to take care of this constituent, and just let me go do it. I don't like somebody hovering over me. And if I need help, I'll come and ask you. Or when I get the job done, I'll come and tell you. And if you want to follow up, that's fine. But don't hover over me every 5 minutes saying, just to get this done, just get that done. And Charlie let me do that. And one thing, when I worked for Charlie, I did the military casework. Mm-hmm. And the Department of the Navy, they would take staffers down to Norfolk and give them briefings on how the Navy operates, and we went on a submarine just to make us a little familiar with what the Navy does. Uh-huh. And the other branch of the military did the same thing. And when I was down there, we went on an aircraft carrier. And while we were on the carrier, they took us into this little IMAX theater and showed us this little video of planes, fighters, catapulting off the carrier and flying around.
Okay.
Well, I got to tell you, when you're sitting in this little IMAX theater and those engines rev up, I mean, your heart is pounding. And I'm thinking to myself, wow, that would be so exciting to do. So when we were finished up the video and we were walking out, I said to the commander, I said, sir, do you take staff on rides on those fighter planes? And he looked at me, and you could see the look on his face like, oh, no. And he said, Peggy, I can't authorize if I tell you who you need to talk to. And one thing led to another, and they told me that Charlie would need to write a letter. So I went in, and I mentioned something to Charlie, and I said, if I draft a letter, would you sign it? He said, sure. And so I drafted a letter, and he signed it, and it went through. And I would get these calls like, you really sure you want to do this? We're going to have to put you through training, survival training, blah, 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 blah. And they were trying to discourage me. I said, yeah, I want to do it. And then they came back and said, well, we can't take you unless Charlie goes too. And Charlie had a bad back, so he couldn't get in. So I'm thinking that's the end of that. And then somebody else came back, well, no, maybe we can try to make an exception, blah, blah, blah. And anyway, a few weeks later, I got a call from the Secretary of the Navy's office wanting to know when I wanted to go down north for the training. And, I walked into Charlie, and I told him. And, I mean, I was just floating on air.
Yeah.
And because at the time, to my knowledge, I was the only female staffer that had ever done that.
Wow.
They had taken, men up, but not women. And Charlie said to me, Peggy, I knew if anybody could pull it off, you could. And I thought maybe he had made a phone call or done something. He said, no. He said, you're on your own on that one.
Wow.
And I got to tell you, it was one of the most fascinating experiences of my life.
That sounds like, wow.
Do you think he did and just would never tell you?
No.
He would have told you.
He would have told me. He would have told me.
Well, feeding into this idea of Charlie Angels kind of bridges really nice to Good Time Charlie and this image of Good Time Charlie. I was wondering if you can answer a couple questions about it. First, how much of the Good Time Charlie image is sort of real versus media, in your opinion?
Charlie did like to have a good time, no question about it. He liked to work hard and he liked to play hard. And that's another reason we got along, because that's right up my alley. If there was a key issue, I mean, he'd work 24/7, like with the Afghanistan.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think, you know, people that know the story behind that realize that, you know, he did a lot of work, you know, to make that happen. When it's time to play, you know, he liked to party, he liked to have a good time, just like anybody else. I think the media played up a lot of it. I think at times when Charlie, you know, would run into issues, you know, make a wrong decision and, you know, a reporter was there. Or, you know, sometimes Charlie would talk to reporters. And again, he was just a very laid-back guy and everything was on the record with him. And, you know, he might be talking to a reporter, casual conversation, like, oh, you're not going to believe what happened here, you know. And or he might be having a drink with the reporter and something happens. Anyway, next thing you know, the reporter writes a story about it. And you know, it gets kind of blown up in the media. So I think some, you know, part of it was hype but part of it was just Charlie.
Just Charlie. Now, obviously, as both a member of his staff, but clearly a friend, how did you feel about the Good Time Charlie image and actual Charlie?
I didn't mind it at all. I mean, I thought it was a lot more fun working for a colorful member of Congress like Charlie versus, you know, somebody who was just kind of a deadbeat. And it didn't bother me because, again, in the work I did, when I needed Charlie, he was there.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, no matter what. And if I had an issue where there was a constituent that I honestly felt, you know, say somebody had been turned down for Social Security disability benefits, if I honestly felt it was just a flaw in the system, and we needed to turn it around, and if I couldn't do it on my own, I'd go to Charlie. And he was there, you know. And because I'd go to him a lot, but when I needed him, and he would just, you know, Peggy, what do you need?
Yeah.
And you know, so he was always, you know, doing whatever he could for his constituents. I mean, they were very, very important to him.
Mm-hmm.
And because he knew who put him in office.
Fair enough.
Yes.
Fair enough. Now, did Charlie have not just allies in Congress, of course, but did he have? Was he genuinely good friends with any other members of Congress? Did he hang out with any other members of Congress?
I don't know particulars of who he hung out with. I mean, it's been a while. But I do know he had a lot of friends in Congress. Because Charlie wasn't somebody that would ask his colleagues for a favor very often. And so when this Afghanistan issue came up, I mean, I think that's part of why he was able to get things done like he could. Because when his colleagues needed a favor, if it wasn't anything, if they needed him to vote yay or nay on a bill, if it wasn't anything that was going to jeopardize his constituents, he'd go along with it.
Okay.
You know? Or if it was something that he didn't feel was bad for the country, you know, he'd go along with it. So he saved a lot of chits over the years.
Okay. Well, so tell me a little bit about that. Then, did he have a core group of then sort of political allies or those he dealt constantly with in these sort of back and forth discussions about getting a law passed or a policy decision?
I don't think there was any, you know, particular core group. I think Charlie was well liked by the entire Congress.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the House and the Senate, just because of his personality. And, you know, people knew that he was more known for, you know, the Good Time Charlie image.
Uh-huh.
But I think people also recognize the fact that when he needs to be serious, he will.
And so would you describe him as, not the person, but just talking as a politician? Was he a good politician at playing, not playing the game, but interacting with the daily business
Absolutely.
Of Congress?
Absolutely. Yeah, Charlie was a very, very intelligent man.
Well, I was going to say, we keep hearing a lot about his charm and people liking him. But as you just said, he's a very intelligent person. Is that why he's so successful in Congress for so long?
I think not only his intelligence, but I think his intelligence and his charm,
mm-hmm.
and his way just to work with any type of person,
mm-hmm.
Is what made him so successful mm-hmm. in Congress.
He seemed to have a, I don't know if it's special, I don't know if I would say, but a close relationship with Tip O'Neill.
Yes.
How did that come about, and you know, did you notice any, I mean, I wouldn't say special favors, but how did they work together so well? I'm here, guy from Massachusetts, guy from Texas.
I guess the same way that Charlie got along with other members, you know, because when Tip needed something, he, you know, he would go to Charlie, and if Charlie didn't feel it was going to be detrimental to his constituents or the country, I mean, he would go along with it. And Charlie was able, he was a good negotiator, and you know, Charlie was able to work some other members to sway them to do, you know, what the speaker wanted. I think...
Do you think that the speaker used Charlie as kind of a emissary to some of the more conservative, quite often Southern Democrats that he had to deal with? So, Charlie, can you go convince these people? Did that go on, or...?
Probably, and I'm not sure he'd say convince, but, you know, can you go talk to them and try to persuade them, or you know. But I think, you know, I think the speaker would have done that with other members as well, not just Charlie. Hmm. You know, I think he targeted Charlie, again, because of Charlie's ability to... sway people and his ability to approach people, and you know, he was a good negotiator.
Yeah. Now, maybe this might seem a little obvious with him being on appropriations and then foreign aid. Being in office for quite a long time as well, was Charlie a powerful congressman?
In his own way, yes.
What do you mean by in his own way?
Again, because of his charisma and his intelligence, he had an innate ability to get things done.
Mm-hmm.
But as far as being powerful like the speaker, no, you know, because
sure.
he wasn't in a leadership position.
Sure.
Well, you could speak on that, right? You work for two people that, you know, you would say powerful. Wayne Hayes was powerful because of his position and the seniority he had built up. So, and you said Charlie was different. So, can you kind of give us the dichotomy of the two men's styles and why each was effective? And
Wayne Hayes, if you crossed him, he at times could be resentful. And if you crossed him, he might, you know, do something to make your life a little uncomfortable. Being head of the House Administration Committee, you know, he controlled where your office space was, parking places, things like that. You know, just the everyday comforts of being a member of Congress. And, you know, I heard stories, again, I couldn't confirm any of this, but I heard stories where... there was a page. At the time, you had pages run the elevators. It wasn't, you know, electric. And there was a page that crossed him on the elevator. And, you know, Congressman Hayes had this kid's paycheck held up for a month. Yeah, again, I don't know if it's true or not, but you hear these stories.
Wow, yeah.
Or, you know, other members, when it came time to getting offices, you know, the basement of the Cannon House office building is one of the worst places you want your office.
Sure.
Well, you know, if you had crossed him, that's where you're going to wind up.
Hmm.
You know, and things like that.
So we can figure out who crossed them by who was down there.
at times. But on the, and when Wayne Hayes, when he was accused of having Elizabeth Ray on his payroll to be his mistress, they just jumped on that.
Yeah.
And he wasn't able to work his way out because he did have some people that didn't like him. And they were just trying to figure it would be a good time to pay him back. Where Charlie, on the other hand, you know, when Charlie would fall off the deep end, you know, with different allegations, he would always come out, you know, because people weren't as eager. People, I think, were more eager to forgive Charlie than Congressman Hayes, if that makes sense.
And that is, not to put words in your mouth, but is that, that's his charm. That's
yes. Yes.
His ability with people.
Yes. Yes.
Actually, you came on just at the time of Giuliani and the investigation, right?
I came on in 79.
Oh, no, no,
76.
So you came on in 76, so you were leaving.
84.
Just after that.
Yes.
Okay. What was the environment like in the office and amongst the Angels when this investigation is going on? Was it very tense, or oh, don't worry, Charlie, we'll get out of this?
It wasn't that it was that tense, and again, I wasn't involved with it, but you just do your job. You know, you just take it as another project, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
And you know, you just work together, and you know, you do your best to try to make it come out in his best interest.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Now, then, did you see the transition from Simpson to Schnabel? Or did Schnabel follow you after you left?
Oh, gosh. I don't remember.
What was that?
I think because I hung out there so much after I left, it was... I think Simpson was still there.
Now, did you have to work with Simpson closely in any regard? And what was it like working for Charlie's administrative assistant?
Simpson was great. He was great. He was like Charlie's right-hand person. And, mm-hmm. You know, again, if I had questions on things, I'd go to him. Because you don't want to bother Charlie all the time. Use him for the, and Simpson met with Charlie, you know, And they shared a door, so it was a lot easier for him to get to Charlie than me.
Okay.
So yeah, but he was great to work with.
Okay.
And again, he the both of them kind of empowered the staff. They let you do your thing. And
okay.
And you know, they kept an eye on it. And if you were kind of going south on something, that they'd call you in and say, let's talk about this.
Uh-huh.
But for the most part, you know, they let you do your thing.
Okay. Okay. Now, what were some of the major, I mean, obviously Afghanistan, I know Charlie, with his constituents, is interested in Social Security, health, veterans. Were there any major policies or issues during your time that Charlie was a real champion of? Any particular piece of legislation?
There was one piece of legislation, and I know I'm not going to get this right, but there were some constituents, not constituents, there were some people in his district, illegal immigrants,
mm-hmm.
applying for different sorts of government program, welfare benefits, Social Security benefits, and I didn't think that was right.
Mm-hmm.
And I asked Charlie if I drafted a bill, if he'd introduce it. And he said, sure. And so I did some research, and I drafted this piece of legislation. And, you know, I told him what the gist of it was. And, you know, he said, okay. And Then somebody told me I had to call the Legislative Council's office. And so I did, and they told me that Charlie couldn't introduce this piece of legislation because I was not a lawyer. And I'm like, what? And they said, well, you got to run it through Legislative Council. So I gave them, you know, what I had. And they essentially took what I had and put the, you know, the legal sites and stuff in and uh-huh. put it on the right form, and it was introduced. And I was so infuriated by that, I decided to go to law school.
Yeah.
You know, it's just... and so I did. I went to law school. And the legislation eventually became part of some Social Security amendments that were passed.
Oh, okay. Did that occurrence happen with others, do you know? Did he encourage members of the staff like you, hey, yeah, work on that piece of legislation and I will maybe introduce it? Or is this something you think there was an anomaly?
No, I think... Again, based on what you were hearing from the constituents, mm-hmm. and since I did the casework, I heard a lot more about the various social programs.
Okay.
But, you know, the ladies that did his defense and appropriations and foreign office, I'm sure that, and I don't recall any bills from them, but I know in appropriations, you know, as with other members, you know, there comes times where you're trying to get some extra money in for your constituents for, mm-hmm. for whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, his staff would see that that happens.
Mm. Okay.
But I'm not familiar with.
Okay.
You said he was really good to work for. Was there some, though, you know, and he let you be independent, but are there some, was there some ironclad rules that this happens, I want to know. If this comes up, I want to be informed because I want to do something about it. Were there some issues, or particularly I'm talking about relationship with constituents, that Charlie said, we need to drop everything and work on this if this comes up? Was there anything like that that went on?
Not that I recall. But again, if there was something big that, you know, I thought was a big issue, you know, I would run with it and tell him. I remember there was some sort of a handicap center in Nacogdoches. I don't remember the name of it. And there was some legislation that was passed, because of this, it had to do with taxes. And there was supposed to be taken out, I think, Social Security taxes for their employees, and they didn't know about it. Their accountant didn't know about it. And anyway... they got a letter and they had to pay something like $18,000 in back taxes. And they had to do it. They were going to have to close their doors. They you know, wrote a letter to Charlie and I got it. And I sent their letter, you know, the cover letter to the IRS like, you know, we typically do. And they sent me back this 2 or 3 page letter, and it was gobbledygook. I mean, I couldn't understand it. And I'm thinking, you know, if I can understand it, I know they can't. I mean, not that they're, you know, dumb or anything, but like page one, the facts were conflicting with, you know, the laws they were quoting on page two. So I called the IRS, and nobody could satisfy me and answer my questions. And I ended up talking to the director in the Dallas office, and, you know, he was talking out of both sides of his mouth. And then I went to Charlie. And I said, Charlie, I said, you know, this just isn't right, you know? And I said, yeah, I know they didn't pay their tax, but they didn't know about it. I said, you know, they've got this country accountant, and he didn't know, and they didn't know. And I said, you know, I think I need to push this one. And mm-hmm. he said, go for it. So we ended up getting the IRS to reverse their decision.
Oh, wow.
And so the center was able to keep their doors open, and... they didn't have to pay the back taxes, but you know, from then on, they had to start paying them. But the, you know, the IRS just I don't know, they didn't really admit fault, but you know, they just agreed to make an exception, so to speak.
You mentioned Nacogdoches. Of course, I don't know if it's urban legend or something that started that Charlie didn't like Nacogdoches. That he would just prefer that Nacogdoches not be in his district. How much of that is a built-up thing, and how much of there was there actually some antipathy?
I don't know. I don't know anything about that.
You ever heard it said the others that you know there's rumors that he didn't like Nacogdoches
yeah.
that much.
Yeah.
They didn't vote for him very often.
Oh.
Well, did he talk about his constituents in any way? Because here is a man from East Texas, from Trinity, but who also goes on to be Good Time Charlie.
Mm-hmm.
And so in many ways, whether even it's issues like abortion, did it not bad, but did he ever voice any concerns about or disagreements with his constituents?
Not to my knowledge, no.
Okay.
No. He was very concerned about his constituents. In fact, when one of the things I used to love to do was go down to the district on the bus, you know, his mobile office,
yes.
so to speak,
yes.
and go from town to town. And it was draining. I mean, it was tiring, but we'd go to different places and pull up in the parking lot, you know, and the folks would be, you know, coming around. They'd see Charlie's bus, and he'd be out there shaking hands. And, you know, and I'd be sitting on the bus, you know, in my chair, my little table, and doing casework. I mean, people would come to Charlie and say, I've got, you know, this problem with Social Security. Oh, Peggy's on the bus. You know, go see Peggy. She can help you out. Or, you know, there was maybe like Linda. Because mm-hmm. Linda did casework in the district.
Okay.
And there was a couple of us sitting on the bus and taking down, you know, all the information we needed mm-hmm. to help the people out. And I just really loved that.
Okay.
And I love seeing different parts of the you know, the district. I mean, I love the country and the South anyway. So
you've traveled around East Texas. So you've seen it. Okay.
Was there ever any, I don't think conflict would be the right word. Any sort of differentiation between the district staff and the Washington staff? Did everybody work together seamlessly?
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. In fact, some of the staff from the district came to D.C. and some from D.C. went to the district. Like Linda McIntosh, when she started in the D.C. office. And in fact, she took my position in D.C., and as far as she took over the casework part, and they gave somebody else the health legislation part, and then she went to the district. And Deanna Tyndall, she started in the district and she came to D.C. Hmm. So there were some staff that just kind of flipped, and some of that depended on, you know, the needs of Charlie as far as staffing, and you know the wishes of the people, you know, if they wanted to go live in the district, whatever. So,
now by the end of the 90s then, so Charlie leaves office, did you ever discuss with him or get a sense of why he decided to retire?
I didn't personally. I heard he was, Congress wasn't the same as it used to be, and he was just frustrated.
What do you mean by Congress wasn't the same? I mean, obviously we have the Gingrich Revolution. Is that how it changed? It became a different environment?
Yeah, and it wasn't... people weren't as congenial to work with. Hmm. And he was just getting really frustrated by the whole thing.
Hmm. Did he speak to that at all, or
not to me? This is just mm-hmm. what I, you know, was told talking to other staffers, and mm-hmm. But because I wasn't working for him at the time, and I didn't talk to him personally about it.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Some people, and this is kind of one thing that we like to know is kind of the personal charm as much as anything else. And when some of our interviews that we've talked to people and. To his family members at some time, said that Charlie, while he was this ebullient personality, he could become almost depressed at times too, and get down and everything. Did you ever see that in the office, or was he probably pretty good at hiding it?
No. I never saw that. There were times where Charlie would be deep in thought, but again, I mean, that's when his you know, he was thinking and planning and... you know, trying to figure out what to do on an issue.
Now, are there any questions or items that we're just not asking you, that you think, hey, they should really know this, or I really just want to share this, anything like that?
I think you've pretty much covered everything.
Well, we're good. Okay, fair enough.
What would you ask Charlie something? If you could ask him today, a question maybe you always wanted him to answer or something, I mean, what would you say to him today?
Oh, gosh. I got to tell you, I've got an apartment in North Little Rock, Arkansas, and I've got the newspaper article hanging on my wall that was in the Washington Post, and it's titled something like Good Time Charlie. And it talks about how he likes to get a party, but yet, you know, he gets things done when he needs to. And there were times where, you know, I just sit there and talk to Charlie, you know, that stuff. But gosh, if I could just ask him, I'd like to pick his brain about his strategy and, you know, the whole Afghanistan issue, and how he was able to pull that off.
Yeah.
A lot of people, I think, really like to know the inner workings of that. I don't know that we're ever going to find out.
No.
What do you think he would say about the current situation?
Over in Afghanistan,
yes.
I think he would say that he was sorry again that he couldn't convince Congress in the end to give Afghanistan, or, you know, to appropriate more funds to rebuild the schools and the homes and the road, the infrastructure over there. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I know that's one of the things he regretted in the end.
Well, knowing that, and a famous line at the end of the movie, right?
yeah.
Makes it clear.
Yes.
And I've heard others say this. Did you ever talk to him, particularly post 9/11, of the attacks that came out? And, oh, it was, you know, Charlie, particularly after the movie, had helped to fund and to arm the Mujahideen and of course, we would accuse people not understanding Mujahideen, Taliban, Al-Qaeda, but did he ever talk about how it made him feel that he would be attacked?
No, I didn't talk to him about things like that. When I saw him, you know, during those times, it was social, and, okay. And you know, we didn't get into that.
Fair enough. Well, we have another interview in about 15 minutes, so
okay.
I think this is probably a good time. Thank you so much
for
meeting with us.
Scrapbook and
turn this off here.
You were the gentleman.